This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. On the local news roundup, Charlotte will lose the 2017 NBA All-Star Game. There are other stories in the news, but we're beginning with that one on an unconventional edition of the news roundup. Unconventional because, as luck would have it, we're going to spend the first part of the program with Governor Pat McCrory. It's been a while since you've been here, Governor.
Good gosh.
Welcome back.
You didn't invite me to Charlotte Squawks and...
By the way, we will extend an invitation to the governor's challenger in this election, Democrat Roy Cooper, to join us on a future program. So yesterday, the NBA announced, very unexpectedly, because I thought we had till the end of the summer before they made this announcement, that they were pulling the 2017 All-Star Game from Charlotte. You've been in conversations with NBA Commissioner Adam Silver. When did you know about this?
I learned it through the media first. Later on in the evening, Adam gave me a call, but I learned about it from the media.
Why the timing?
I have no idea.
He didn't tell you?
No.
What's your reaction?
I'm disappointed. I strongly disagree with their decision. And to put it bluntly, I think it's total PCBS. And it's an insult to our city. It's an insult to our state. And I think it sets a dangerous precedent of the corporate sports and entertainment elite basically asking for a quid pro quo on legislation, or else they'll deny their service. And I don't think that's the way we should do business, and I don't think that's the way the political system should run, is asking for a political quid pro quo. If you don't change this legislation, we'll deny you service, we'll deny revenue. And what's ironic about this is this is not just a North Carolina issue. We have 22 other states that are suing the Obama administration on this issue regarding mandates on the private sector and our universities and our schools. And of those 22 states, we have 13 NBA teams. So there is also, during this process, I think, some selective outrage. And there is selective applications of moral outrage by not only this decision, but other people who have given us feedback on this issue. But, you know, that's allowed in our constitutional system.
You're allowed
to have selective outrage. But, you know, this started here in Charlotte by the political left, this issue of mandating that all private sector businesses demand that they recognize gender identity and gender expression in the use of bathroom, locker room, and shower facilities in all private businesses. They'd be fined unless they do that. In other words, they'd have to accept someone who is a boy but thinks they're a girl but has the anatomy of a boy. They have the choice to use the restroom or locker room or shower facility of their choice. I happen to respectfully disagree with a mandate on all private sector businesses. I don't think it's government's place.
But that's not where the legislation, that's not where HB2 stopped. And that's where that's causing the problem.
But wait a minute. No, the main debate, in fact, I reverse the ability to sue. But the main reason Bruce Springsteen did not come to North Carolina was two reasons. One is the bathroom, restroom, and shower policy. And the second reason was the ability to sue for discrimination in the state of North Carolina, which I ended. I just signed legislation last week to do that. So at the national level, now we have the Attorney General of the United States, we have the Attorney General of North Carolina, we have the President of the United States, we now have the NBA, who firmly believe and respectfully disagree that there should be a mandate on all of our universities, all of our public schools, any business with 15 or more employees, that they must recognize the concept of gender identity and gender expression in public access to restrooms, locker rooms, and showers. And by the way, it's worthy of debate. It should go through both the political and legal process, which it's going through right now, primarily the legal process. But apparently the NBA did not want to recognize that legal
process. So when you spoke to Adam Silver at the NBA, he only spoke about transgender bathroom use. He didn't speak speak about the fact that in the HB2, the state of North Carolina has written a code for non-discrimination throughout the state, affecting all cities and counties, but eliminates protections for LGBT people. That didn't come up? Only the bathroom issue came up?
The state of North Carolina and the city of Charlotte did not have those protections when the NBA made their decision to come to Charlotte, North Carolina for the NBA All-Star Game. When I announced it, when I stood up and helped recruit the NBA All-Star Game, the city of Charlotte did not have those protections. That was in July of 2015. In fact, Mike, in January of 2015, the Charlotte City Council had defeated that motion to have a, quote, non-discrimination clause, which included, by the way, the bathroom, restroom, and shower facility requirement. And the NBA still decided to come. And there was no outroar. There was no objection. There was no protest. The NBA never brought it up when we announced it. It was only later when the city of Charlotte and the mayor, who they have every right to do that, they brought up this issue when most people didn't even know there was an issue. I mean, I'd never heard of this issue when I ran for governor both times. This issue did not come from the political right. This issue came from the political left, and it was well-coordinated national campaign through a group called the HRC. Well-funded, very targeted. I met with the head of the HRC in the governor's office, and he told me exactly what he was going to do. He said he was going to make North Carolina the epicenter
of this movement. But the difference, it seems to me, the difference here, it seems to me, is now that HB 2 has passed, if Charlotte wanted to pass non-discrimination protections, they couldn't.
That's correct. The non-discrimination ordinances regarding gender identity and gender expression, which, by the way, are two words that have no definition by federal or state statute. There are no formal definitions of those two words. So the city of Charlotte passed a law mandating this for all private sector entities in the city of Charlotte with a fine. So the city of Charlotte are the ones who became the bathroom police by the original bill, which we objected to. But now, you know, that's actually irrelevant because since that point in time, the Justice Department, through the Department of Education and through the EEOC, have passed new mandates on every state in the United States of America, every business, and every university and every public school. And that's going through the court system now, and I will respect whatever the court system has to say about that. But, in the meantime, I'm focusing on teacher pay raises and building the economy. And
let's talk about the timeline.
Paying off our debt.
They called a special session of the General Assembly at considerable expense to the taxpayer to vote on and pass right legislation and pass it in one day, which you signed, I understand, within 2 hours of its passage.
I don't know if it was in – it was very short.
It's the same day. So why so quickly?
2 pages of legislation.
Why did you not take some time to look at it, think through some of the possible ramifications of it?
That debate had been going on for months. We had had that debate for months from the time I wrote a letter to
– But why so quickly?
Wait a minute. Because I read it, and I agreed with everything in it, but the part where we – stop the ability to sue in the state of North Carolina.
I mean, did you
feel
that there was such a pressing need to sign that legislation within an hour or two or three?
I wanted the legislature to get out of town. It was Easter weekend. I read it. I understood it. And I understood the political ramifications because all of this was about politics to begin with when it started right here in Charlotte, North Carolina.
But had you taken a week to think about it, would your decision have been the same?
Yes. And I would have also said when I signed it, that I was going to reverse the ability to sue in the state of North Carolina, and I've done just that.
Because you said you referred to this.
I warned the city of Charlotte. I wrote the mayor and council where they read my letter and totally ignored it during the debate, saying, don't do this. Let's have conversation. Let's see what the ramifications are. They did not have any conversation whatsoever with anyone but the 100 or 200 speakers, which the votes had already
but
been
decided. But other bills that have been equally dramatic, you signed one yesterday that protects children against sexual predators, and I believe that bill passed 20 days ago. You didn't sign that the day it was passed by the legislature. Why not?
Because I've got about 200 bills that I'm reviewing.
So I guess why then?
I only had one bill to review then during a special. It was only one bill, and it was about 2 pages long. I've got several hundred bills that I'm reviewing now that were passed during the short session, and I'm having my cabinet review them. But this bill had actually been worked on for weeks.
You said, and I
did not like all parts of that bill, by the way. I didn't even want a special session. But the legislature has that ability to do that. But again, we have the exact same laws, basically, as about 27 other states. And again, 22 states.
Yeah, but do 27 wrongs justify make a right? I mean, does it?
I don't. Who says you may say it's wrong?
I'm just asking.
I'm playing
devil's advocate here.
I think the value of saying that the right of privacy for young men and young girls, young boys and young girls in our public school system and in our university, is worth fighting for, and it's a change of norms that we had never seen or discussed before in the state of North Carolina or, frankly, in the nation until the group called the HRC brought this to the city of Houston and had a referendum. And the voters of the city of Houston turned down the exact same law by 61% of vote. And after the city of Houston did that, the NCAA had their championship game in Houston, Texas. There was no moral outrage by the media, by the political left, or by anyone else.
Coach Krzyzewski at Duke has called this bill embarrassing. NC State's Coach Gottfried called it appalling. UNC's Coach Williams characterized it as disappointing. Are they all wrong? Is the NBA wrong? Or do you agree with Buck Newton, the author of HB2, when he says we must fight to keep our state straight?
I disagree with that comment by Buck Newton. I also disagree with the three coaches, with all due respect. I doubt any of those three coaches have read HB2. I haven't read their playbooks either. Each individual person in our community and in our state can have an opinion on this issue. But I do think there is a political correct elite that is having selective outrage. Let me talk about the selective outrage in this issue. The same companies that had the gall to write the NBA to boycott, to have the NBA boycott our state, which, by the way, included the Charlotte Observer editorial page, asked the NBA to boycott its own city and own state, which I think was reckless. Those same companies do business in China. They do business in Russia. They do business in Saudi Arabia. PayPal did business in Sudan and Iran illegally, in which the human rights record, especially against the gay and lesbian community, is inexcusable. And then they're writing to boycott the state of North Carolina because of a basic political disagreement between the use of the concept of gender identity and gender expression versus the right of privacy in the most private of places, and that's our restroom, showers, and locker room facilities. And this is what parents have told me throughout the state of North Carolina. When my young girl or boy goes to a shower in a middle school, they expect the only people to be in that shower is a person of the same gender. And that's a legitimate debate that this country has been going through for the past 7 months. It was not a debate that this country was having. Now, I personally think for those people who I sincerely care for, who have gender identity and gender expression issues that they're dealing with, we ought to make reasonable accommodations for them in our schools.
Well, in truth, they've been using bathrooms of the opposite gender forever.
In fact, you just haven't known it. Many of them are very upset that the Obama administration and the mayor of Charlotte and others even brought this up because people were dealing with it on their own. But now they brought it up for a political agenda. Had you and I ever discussed this issue?
No, we have not. We have to take a break. We'll come back with more of this and other issues as well with Governor Pat McCrory in just a moment at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Doctors Making House Calls, serving patients in their home or workplace, all insurance accepted, registration information available at doctorsmakinghousecalls.com. Never wait in a doctor's office again. Well, for as long as most people can remember, Gaston County, and specifically Gastonia, have been the brunt of Charlotte's jokes. And quite frankly, Gastonians aren't laughing. They'll admit they've had their challenges, but they've also been working hard to remake themselves, to bring in more businesses, to create more jobs, get more people to put down roots, to rebrand themselves, and get folks here to see them in a new light. Well, they will make their case Monday at 9, right here on this program.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Friday News Roundup. The Republican National Convention ends with a divided GOP. Hillary Clinton prepares to select her running mate. And Roger Ailes is in talks to leave Fox News after sexual harassment allegations.
The News Roundup continues on the Diane Rehm Show after the Charlotte Talks local news roundup from 10 to noon here on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. It's our weekly news roundup, our local news roundup. At the top of the local news this week is the pulling yesterday of the NBA All-Star Game in 2017 from Charlotte because of HB2. And as luck would have it, the governor, Pat McCrory, was already scheduled to be with us for this part of the program.
And I've fulfilled that commitment.
You have. And Democrat Roy Cooper will be extended an invitation as well later on to appear on this program. Now, yesterday,
we won't have to spend 20 minutes on that issue.
Well, we'll see. Yesterday, you issued a statement. I want to move on to other issues, but yesterday you issued a statement about this HB2, this NBA decision, in which you said the sports and entertainment elite, Attorney General Roy Cooper, and the liberal media have for months misrepresented our laws and maligned the people of North Carolina simply because most people believe boys and girls should be able to use school bathrooms, etc. Elite. Entertainment elite. Yeah. Wouldn't that be accurate? Is that meant as a criticism? But if you're in the NBA, aren't you in the elite of the athletes?
You're in the entertainment elite, no doubt about
it. But what's wrong with that?
They're making decisions on behalf of everyone else, and I don't think they should have exclusive rights.
Well, no, they're making decisions on behalf of themselves.
No, and their fans.
You can play that game anywhere.
And their fans. And they do have a fan base. And so do all the entertainment stars.
It's costing Charlotte $100 million. Do you worry? Do you worry? Because the NCAA has got their eyes on this. Do you worry that they'll start pulling regional playoff games?
I think there will still be continued pressure from the liberal HRC group to put political pressure on people to pull games. I don't know where people got that $100 million figure. Listen, we have a $500 billion.
Charlotte Convention and Visitors Bureau, for one thing.
Can I finish a sentence, please? We have a $500 billion economy in North Carolina. Yeah. $500 billion economy in North Carolina. We have increased the number. Our travel and tourism has increased by 7% this year.
Were you the mayor when the Democratic National Convention was in Charlotte?
It came right after. I was mayor while they were campaigning.
But when the Democratic National Convention announced that it was coming, you were excited about it, and you were touting the surplus money we'd be getting because of the arrival of the Democratic National Convention.
Actually,
and this is the second biggest event to come to Charlotte.
Actually, the NRA was one of the biggest events. The NRA was probably one of the biggest conventions we have. I actually didn't recruit for the Democratic or Republican National Convention because I didn't think it was worth the expense.
You also called this federal overreach many times, and you did yesterday in your memo to the public here, federal overreach by the Obama administration.
Yes.
But wasn't it overreach on the part of the legislature to dip into Charlotte's business?
I don't think it's Charlotte's business to tell the private sector what their bathroom, locker room, and shower policy should be. And I think it goes beyond the scope.
But if Charlotte's elected officials made that decision, why isn't it their business? I've given you a lot of time to finish sentences.
Can I finish a sentence before you ask me a question and I'm answering it?
Go ahead.
I don't think the city of Charlotte, within their scope of responsibility, has the authority to put a regulation on every business in North Carolina to tell them what their bathroom, locker room, and shower policy should be. I don't think that's the city of Charlotte's business. And as mayor of Charlotte, we never would have considered something like that. And frankly, I don't think it's the state of North Carolina's business to do that on the private sector or the federal government. Mm-hmm. I think the private sector, and this is what's misinterpreted by the media often, I don't think the government should tell any private sector entity what their restroom, shower, or locker room policy should be. If they want to have gender identity and gender expression as one of the criteria, I have no problem with that. The only thing that I have responsibilities are schools, our universities, our public rest stops, and our government buildings. That's the only thing HB2 applies to. It doesn't apply to anyone in the private sector. It doesn't apply to any restaurant in Charlotte or Asheville or Chapel Hill. it doesn't apply to that. They can have their own non-discrimination ordinances as they please. And that's exactly my libertarian viewpoint on
that.
So
when you told Adam Silver that, what was his reaction?
Again,
assuming that you did.
Adam and I have had – Adam and I actually like Adam. Uh-huh. We have developed a relationship, and we had a long conversation. We have an intellectual disagreement on this issue.
Okay.
And I think we need to – we're almost, Mike, in an Orwellian type of situation in our country in which the thought police – are purging anyone who disagrees with their particular political opinion. And in this case, the NBA is purging our state and our city based upon our political democratic process and denying their services based upon our political opinion, which okay. I think is Orwellian.
Well, that gives me a chance to segue to another topic. The Republican National Convention, which wrapped up last night, and one of the things that Donald Trump said was the time for political correctness has passed. He said that last night in his speech. I'm paraphrasing.
I agree.
You didn't go. Why not?
I didn't go last time either. I considered it a waste of time, especially when you're governor and you're running for governor. I didn't go last.
But Donald Trump. Ago. Donald Trump. Are you avoiding being?
No. In fact, I'm going to be with him.
Tuesday, Monday.
I think Monday.
He's coming here.
I've met with Mr. Trump. Okay. I met with Donald about 3 weeks ago.
A lot of mainline Republicans are worried about him and worried about being able to control him, worried about what he's going to do to the party. What are your impressions?
I think that's the same thing true with mainline Democrats worried about Hillary Clinton. So it's we've got two candidates that have very high negative opinions, but we have a choice between Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, and Mike Pence. By the way, Mike Pence is a very good friend, and I think is an excellent vice presidential.
So are you supporting Donald Trump?
I'm supporting that ticket all the way.
Are you supporting Donald Trump?
Yes, and Mike Pence. I'm supporting the ticket.
Can you say his name?
I'm supporting the ticket of Trump and Pence.
Because so many people just won't say his name.
I had an interesting meeting with him because I was curious to see what he's like versus the public persona, and some of it's self-inflicted.
The GOP platform is very conservative. It's been described as the most overtly anti-LGBTQ platform in history. And yet last night, Donald Trump talked about, although he was having trouble putting the letters together, LGBTQ people, and was congratulating the assembled multitudes there for applauding him, as though he were surprised that they would applaud him for his support.
I think the crowd was extremely respective, and they weren't the thought police and being rude against something he would say. I think this is where the thought police, we ought to accept good feedback and not purge people who disagree. But I frankly disagree with discrimination against anyone who, based upon their sexual orientation, based upon their gender, based upon their race, and I would fight against any of that discrimination at any time.
Are you going to encourage the legislature to make that change in the document that they wrote?
I'm actually encouraging the U.S. federal government. I wrote a letter to all representatives and all senators about 3 or 4 months ago saying it's time to update the U.S. Civil Rights Act. And the dilemma we have in the U.S. Civil Rights Act, and this is where some of my Republican brethren disagree with me, but I personally don't think that we should have different non-discrimination ordinances in every city, town, and county and state in the United States of America. I think we ought to have one non-discrimination ordinance which covers the United States of America. When it comes to discrimination, we're one country. And we shouldn't have one non-discrimination ordinance in Charlotte and another one in Huntersville and another one in Gastonia. I had a disagreement with the NBA about this. I went, well, you're thinking about going to Louisiana. Louisiana is one of the states suing the Obama administration along with North Carolina. And he went, well, but New Orleans, isn't it? I went, well, what happens if people going to the NBA game are staying outside of New Orleans? I mean, so you're drawing these political boundaries. I personally think the 1964.
So New Orleans, the laws in New Orleans are different than the laws in the rest of Louisiana?
Yes.
Well, isn't that a template for Charlotte and North Carolina?
No. That's the dilemma, is why should we have all these different non-discrimination laws, not only throughout a state, we ought to have one non-discrimination law. and the 1964 Civil Rights Act.
What about states' rights?
I believe when it comes to discrimination, when it comes to discrimination, we ought to speak as one nation. This is where I disagree with my Republicans. And there are a lot of Democrats, I think, including President Obama, who would probably agree with me that the federal government, especially since the 1964 Civil Rights Act, ought to have one non-discrimination ordinance. And the debate with all this actually comes down to the word sex in the 1964 Civil Rights Act. And in the past 4 months, I've had to study this issue an awful lot. In the past 4 months, the Obama administration through the Justice Department is redefining the term sex to include gender identity. And it's not a term that's been defined by the federal government. And that's what this whole debate is about, is the term gender identity. And I think it's worthy of discussion. But it ought to be a discussion at the national level, not political boundary to political boundary in every state or every city or town. I firmly believe that.
Let's talk about some other things.
Yeah,
I know that one of the things that you wanted to talk about today was the Queen City Express, which I don't think anybody knows anything about.
Oh, man, it's a game changer.
Why?
It's a game changer. First of all, the other day we had a wonderful announcement of a CSX intermodal infrastructure in the Rocky Mount area, which it desperately needs because Rocky Mount hasn't had the economic recovery that other areas like Charlotte have had. And so that's going to help with supplies and infrastructure and rail. We're putting $100 million into new rail to help get supplies and services. And there's a direct connection to the Wilmington port with that decision, which is extremely important. And then there's a direct connection with rail to Charlotte, because when we have manufacturing in the Charlotte region, they typically pick Charleston as their port or Savannah to get their supplies. And this is not just Charlotte. We're talking about Shelby. We're talking about Lincoln County. We're talking about the Catawba County. We're talking about the entire region. Well, now we're going to have a direct rail express to Wilmington, which will be a great choice for industry to export their products and services.
And this is important because the Panama Canal is being widened and bigger ships will be bringing more goods into ports. And if they can get access to the rest of the country quickly, which Charlotte's intermodal facility allows them to do, that's a boon. You're smiling.
That was a great – that was where you interrupted me and I liked it. You were dead on.
I read.
That was pretty impressive.
Good gosh. Let's talk about the.
No, it's. I tell you what, it'll also help. We've got a lot of towns between Charlotte and Wilmington that are not having the economic recovery that they deserve. Wadesboro, Whiteville, and other towns, Pittsburgh between here and. And we need to connect. The program that I initiated when I became governor, borrowing upon a theme I was in Charlotte, was Connect NC. Mm-hmm. And we've got to connect NC through rail infrastructure and communications, because we have these little towns outside the major metropolitan areas that cannot survive on an island by itself. So the best way to connect Wadesboro is to connect Wadesboro to Charlotte's economic vitality. And I feel the same way about Lincolnton. I feel the same way about Gastonia and Shelby. Their economic future is actually tied to connecting to the Charlotte metropolitan area. And the same thing is true outside of Wilmington and Raleigh-Durham and Asheville and Boone and other areas.
Since connections are so important, this is a hot topic locally. You may have heard of it, and people are really upset about what they perceive to be the chokehold that will become – that it already is and will become even more so, in their opinion, I-77, once these toll lanes go into effect, because you're tying up the ability to widen those roads for 50 years. People still want you and the state government – to cancel that contract. Why can't that contract be canceled?
I do not have the ability to make up the funding if I can't. I do not have the authority as a governor to cancel that contract.
Who does have the authority?
The legislature does.
Why can't they cancel it? Why is there so much political will to keep this thing going when it seems...
Because the Charlotte City Council and the regional leaders voted to do this.
But what the legislature doesn't give a damn about what Charlotte City Council thinks. That's quite obvious.
They do on 90% of the time. It's 10% of the time where they're not correct.
Well, why does it count this time?
Because it's part of our transportation planning process and guidelines that we have. And by the way, most people don't realize, but the Charlotte-Mecklenburg area and the Charlotte region has gotten more transportation money than they've ever seen since I've been governor. Than they've seen in their lifetime.
So do you think that this I-77 toll lane project is a good thing? Do you think it is?
I think it's the alternative to speed up construction for the next 10 years. And it's
but
the
then what
it's
about the rest of the 40 years that follow?
But no, they'll be able to widen it. They just have to renegotiate the contract. But this was a decision your mayor and other mayors in this area, and which goes all the way back to Anthony Fox, Mayor Fox, helped make this decision.
But elected officials.
And by the way, he's helped support this decision in the DOT as Secretary of Transportation.
But elected officials in that area, Lake Norman area, have changed their minds about this.
That's correct. And I gave the whole region a choice, but it's a weighted voting choice, which was around when I was mayor, was around when Harvey Gantt was mayor, Richard Van Root was mayor. We have a weighted voting choice where Charlotte could have stopped the whole project had they voted against it. But they decided this is best for Charlotte and congestion and their commerce.
So we only have 2 minutes left, and I know you were eager to talk about the new budget, which includes teacher pay raises of an average of 4.7%, and you say that teacher pay in North Carolina has increased faster than in any other state in the nation, but we're still woefully behind, aren't we? We're like 47th in teacher pay or something
like
that?
We were 48th when I became governor. The day I became governor, we were 48th in teacher pay. After the second year, we moved down to 42nd. We're now going to be in the lower 30s in a short 3 years that I've been governor. So we're now in the average compensation for teachers will be over $50,000 a year salary plus $15,000 to $17,000 a year of benefits, $65,000 to $67,000 of average compensation for teachers across North Carolina. It'll be the highest we've ever seen in North Carolina history. We've had the fastest and largest increases in teacher pay since I've been governor in our history and also in the United States of America. Now, the union does not like this to be repeated, and neither does Roy Cooper, but it's the facts. And I'm very, very proud of that because they deserve it. And the teachers had not had pay raises for 5 years before I became governor.
You recently signed a bill that restricts who has access to the video shot by police body and dash cams. Yeah. And when those cameras were first brought up and money was appropriated for them, we were told it would improve transparency for the police department. Given what's been going on around the country when we've been privy to seeing the video from these cameras, it's clear that transparency is important and maybe necessary. So why sign that bill?
Because the bill does allow transparency, but there's a process for that transparency, which not only protects the public's right to know, it also protects the constitutional rights of our police officers. But all videos will be shown to the public within a reasonable amount of time. But we've also seen we have to protect the victims of the crime. We have to protect the police officers of this crime. And by just sending out one video, it's not the total story. So I'm very proud of that. The Police Benevolent Association, the Sheriff's Association, and all public safety organizations totally agree with this decision.
Governor, thank you for joining
us. Thanks a lot,
I know
Mike.
You have
I
to
appreciate
go.
It.
Please come back again soon.
I will be glad to.
Or the hour. Don't avoid us like the plague. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Firehouse Casual Living Stores, serving the Carolinas for nearly 40 years with branded outdoor patio seating and dining furniture. Showrooms located on Johnston Road and W.T. Harris Boulevard. Details at fhcasual.com. The Republican National Convention wrapped up last night with a divided GOP. Hillary Clinton prepares to select her running mate, and Roger Ailes resigns from Fox News over sexual harassment allegations. A panel of journalists joins Frank Sesno, who is filling in for Diane Rehm, on the weekly news roundup, the National Hour, coming up in just 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on WFAE, followed by the International Hour. And we will continue with our local news roundup when we come back right after this.
Next week, Democrats will meet in Philadelphia to nominate Hillary Clinton for president. NPR and PBS NewsHour will be there, too. We're teaming up to bring you live coverage each night of the convention.
I'm Rachel Martin. Join me, Judy Woodruff, and Gwen Ifill as we take you inside the arena and to the floor of the Democratic National Convention. It's special coverage from PBS NewsHour and NPR News.
Convention coverage begins Monday night at 7 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins, and believe it or not, this is the local news roundup. WFAE's Tom Bullock is here along with WBTV's Nick Oxner.
First time saying that name?
Yeah, ever. Eric Spanberg, senior staff writer for the Charlotte Business Journal, and Eric Frazier, editorial writer for the Charlotte Observer. So you've all been sitting in the room while we've been talking to the governor. What are your reactions to what he had to say, specifically about the NBA and the NHB2?
Well, he loves the Charlotte Business Journal and the Charlotte Observer. I took that away. No, he said a lot of the same things he said during the debate. I think the one area that maybe bears further investigation or analysis is the fact that he talked a lot about the bathroom policy. And what the NBA and others have talked about is other elements of the bill, particularly the lack of protection or inclusion of LGBT people in the non-discrimination part of state law. So that is something that he just completely did not address.
Well, and there's a couple more things, too. I mean, he's talking about the fact that he signed the bill so quickly because it was only two pages. It's four. Still pretty quick. But then he also talked about something that I thought was really interesting. He talked about that this is a good conversation that needs to happen, that deserves to happen. But by the governor's office, by the governor himself, the conversations that he had over this exact issue have all happened after he signed House Bill 2. And that is not – that's not just a timing issue. This issue is so complicated. There are – definitions of gender identity and gender expression that are official definitions in the psychiatrist Bible. There are medical definitions of this. This isn't something that's just thrown out of nowhere. I wish he, I think it's interesting. Yes, we are having a national conversation. I think it would have behooved the state of North Carolina, the city of Charlotte, and anyone on either side of this issue if those conversations happened before the bill became law.
Also would have been helpful had those conversations taken place in public, I think. You know, you have to look. The governor said that the bill was debated and written over a period of weeks before it was passed.
One half of 1 hour for public comment.
Correct. And then, when I talked with him last week, he said, we've been talking for months with the NBA over the proposed legislation that would have altered HB2. And he said, sometimes you have to do things in private. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but that was essentially what he said. And so I think there has been a lot of talk. I don't think a lot of that by many of North Carolina's political leaders have been done out in the
open. And let's also – I want to mention real quickly, his campaign yesterday put out a statement that blamed the NBA canceling the 2017 All-Star Game in Charlotte on the Clintons. And they got to that conclusion by the fact that Doug Sosnick, who was an advisor in the Clinton White House, has been a consultant to the NBA for 10 or so years. I mean, that kind of
partisan rhetoric.
That kind of thinking is akin to Hillary Clinton blaming Pat McCrory for her email problem. I mean, it just makes no sense.
I think what you've got is a governor who, if he had his druthers, I think, and of course he can't say this, and he'll probably tell me I'm crazy for saying this, but if he could do this all over again, I would have to think he would not handle this the way he has handled it. I mean, if you look at the – I'm looking at the latest Huffington Post polling aggregate, 43 polls from 10 pollsters. He's currently at 42%. Cooper's at 44. That's not where an incumbent sitting governor in a rising economy should be. HB2 is the anvil around his neck right now.
Which is interesting because he said, he may have made this remark as an aside, but that people are having trouble understanding what HB2 is because the media hasn't been clear enough on that. And I think that some of those poll numbers would reflect that maybe the public has a pretty good handle on HB2.
And the reality, too, just to build off what you're saying, Eric, people do know. Maybe your average North Carolinian hasn't read the full bill. I'm sure that they haven't. But there's enough information. This has been going on now for months. People understand what is in the bill. I don't like calling it the bathroom bill because that's what everybody attaches to. And frankly, those provisions are just the first and second provisions in this bill as a whole. And it does so much more.
Well, isn't his side of the equation equally guilty? If there is some guilt to be had in the media, and I'm not saying there is, but if there is, wouldn't the other side be guilty of focusing on the bathroom issues at the expense of the other issues, which are
significant?
Significant.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair – look, that's an issue of headlines. That's an issue of tweets and Facebook posts. And honestly, I think that is a fair thing to
bring
up.
But let's also remember this, that and I'm generalizing here, but on both sides, people who feel strongly that HB2 is bad or feel it's good, on both sides, people are starting to say on the bathroom part of it, hey, look, the courts are going to handle that. Mm-hmm. You know, so there is agreement on the extremes about that piece of it, which, of course, logically leaves you with the rest of the bill to be dealt with.
Right. Mm-hmm. So in the break, when we were off the air for 90 seconds, Eric, the governor walked up to you and said, your newspaper should take the blame for this because you called for the NBA to pull the game. And I didn't hear the other side of that argument from you.
But he keeps saying
that. Is that not true? Did you not call for that in an editorial?
My colleague, Peter St. Ange, wrote a piece earlier this spring in which he was talking about the boycotts that were already going on. And he said that basically, you know, people get hurt. There are, you know, people get hurt that you don't intend to have get hurt. Mm-hmm. You know, there's collateral damage. Like in this case, the NBA winds up punishing Charlotte, which actually agrees with the NBA on this issue. It's messy, you have collateral damage, but basically his point was, but I can understand why people do it.
It was
a nuanced point that the governor is basically, you know, ramming into one.
Why the timing? You know? Because I know it takes a long time for cities to line up support and get the money involved and make sure they have enough hotel rooms to handle the All-Star weekend. But they had we were told they had until the end of the summer.
What the NBA commissioner said was, we need to do this by the end of the summer. They wanted to move as quickly as they could. And really, I think any sort of reasonable person watching this somewhat dispassionately would have to say the NBA gave Charlotte, North Carolina every chance to adjust, and they couldn't reach
Absolutely.
A deal. And not only that, the most surprising thing about this whole episode to me is that 2019 is Charlotte's for the taking as long as they can reach some sort of compromise.
So let's flip the coin here, because the governor said, why should they be calling the shots over elected officials and over the democracy that is
because you said it, it's their game. They can take it wherever they want.
But it's blackmail, too, in a way.
But here's this capitalism is what it is.
That's exactly
right.
It's
a free market economy. And I know Governor McCrory and every other good Republican in North Carolina is a supporter of the free market. And so that's the free market coming back on them.
And I have to say, Nick is exactly right. I mean, the reality is the NBA can do whatever it chooses to do because its product it controls.
Right.
And here's the thing about this whole situation. It's one of those random moments where you actually hear Republicans truly going after big business. I mean, he talked about corporate elites. He talked about in the statement after the NBA made the announcement yesterday. He talked about, you know, sports elites. You asked him about that yourself, Mike. He talked about entertainment elites. He's been talking about this stuff.
And where people do business.
Let's talk about PayPal. Another thing that he brought up, one thing that I still find interesting and I still have not heard a solid answer on is simple. If PayPal is such a disgusting company that does business in all these seedy places, then why did the state of North Carolina offer it money to build a facility here?
Because they were still doing business in Cuba and China and all those
and
other
Sudan,
places.
And Sudan. And those points are accurate.
They do.
But I
think it was Eric Frazier who just mentioned the word nuance. I think you said nuance. And that's what gets lost in so many of these debates. For example, this issue of the NBA and the Hornets. Yes, the Hornets do play regular season games here, and they are part of the NBA. That does not then become axiomatic that the All-Star game has to be here or should be here, because the All-Star game is on another level. It is a signature event, and the NBA is entirely within their rights to say, we have a business here, but we're not putting our most important weekend in a state where we disagree with their policies.
Except the NBA has said that we hold all of our teams to the same standards that we would hold an All-Star game. So they have conflated the two. So I agree with what you said, but they've conflated the
two. I disagree with you on that point for, again, let's take Eric's favorite word right now, nuance, for this reason. The games take place in the arena, which is a private venue and is not, as the governor said.
That's a public venue.
No. Is it?
The city owns that building.
City owned.
It's managed by the Hornets.
I take it back.
And also, I mean, I'm trying to pull up the statement from a couple weeks ago. The NBA was pretty clear. We hold all of our teams to the same standards that we choose for the All-Star game. And so it sends a message. If I'm the Charlotte Hornets ownership, and we can talk about that in a second on what some of their reaction has been, it sends a message take from it what you will about what the NBA thinks, you know, about having a franchise in Charlotte and North Carolina if they made the decision to pull the All-Star game.
Had this been the NFL pulling the Super Bowl from Charlotte, or had this been, and this may happen, the NCAA pulling regional playoffs from North Carolina, would there be a different reaction or a hasty reaction?
Well, I think if this were the Super Bowl, we wouldn't even be sitting here talking about it, because everybody would just beat a hasty full scale retreat and do what the NFL says.
So what has been reaction of city leaders, of the chamber, of the Hornets to this announcement yesterday?
Well, the Hornets took the line that they are disappointed, but they are grateful that at least they have a chance in 2019 to preserve it. When you hear the chamber, the visitors authority, local officials, they all say similar things, although I think it is worth noting that all the politicians have immediately just hammered each other, depending on whether you're a Democrat or Republican, and blamed the other one. Either it's Charlotte's fault for bringing the issue up, or it's the state's fault for not relenting on an issue that has been unpopular both nationally and locally in among some.
$100 million. He challenged me on that figure. That's the figure that's been floated out there as to what Charlotte will lose from losing this weekend. Where did that number come from? And is it accurate?
That figure was first used like a year and a half ago, because I just read the minutes last night because I'm a dork, when the Charlotte City Council approved a $600,000 payment to the NBA. So that's the figure being used by the CRVA. That's the figure that was presented by the city manager at the time that they – or the deputy city manager, Ron Kimball, at the time that he made that presentation to the city council. It was $60 million in direct spending and $100 million total economic impact.
And I will say, you know, when the governor says, I don't know about that number, look, I don't know about any of those numbers. In fact, I usually use the joke that you divide it by pi, whatever it is. But look, that is what we do. We, as a collective body, the government makes these estimates, the visitors authority. And so this is a standard number. It's not a crazy number in terms of these kinds of estimates. I think it's fair to say, look, in mid-February, we usually don't have thousands, tens of thousands of hotel rooms filled with people just clamoring to, you know, sort of sample 40-degree weather and rain. So it was going to have an impact.
There is one point that no one can deny, though, in terms of an impact. And I agree. Like, you can find scholarly articles about the economic impact that tell you the city will make or lose a ton of money on these kinds of ventures.
Right.
But the image issue, something we talked about a lot here, the image issue, the headlines, the idea that, you know, I remember back in 1992 when Colorado was collectively known as the state of hate, and that was because of an amendment that was passed that barred LGBT people from protections. That moniker, if it's not already being used about North Carolina, I wouldn't be surprised to see us start getting those kinds of monikers, because this is now a fact. And this will hurt the image.
We talked about this a couple of weeks ago. Attorney General Roy Cooper's campaign outraised Governor McCrory's campaign in the second quarter. And Nick, you reported on WBTV earlier that there was an ebb and flow of contributions around the time of HB2. Has there been any significant change since that time?
Well, and of course, we just analyzed the second quarter numbers, and so I don't have anything from the last couple of weeks, but it was really interesting. When we started breaking down the calendar of events and you look at their fundraising totals, Pat McCrory's fundraising really took a dip after the Bruce Springsteen announcement. It took a dip after the USDOJ sued North Carolina. And conversely, Roy Cooper's fundraising numbers skyrocketed after things like USDOJ and what have you. And so I frankly would have thought that both candidates could have, you know, made a big fundraising push off of this on their respective sides, but it really appeared by the numbers that we broke down that only Roy Cooper was the major beneficiary over the time.
But when you think about it, it does kind of make sense that would happen, because what do political donors generally, what do they really ultimately want? They want to bet on the winner. And so when the sort of ebb and flow of the campaign rolls, especially the third rail issue that is sort of the defining issue of this campaign, when it begins to move in Cooper's direction, you're probably going to see donors start moving his way too. And I think this is just something that it's going to take a really smart, a really tactically smart and politically, you know, it's going to take a brilliant effort from Pat McCrory's team to get him across this finish line in November.
So in the 2 minutes we have left, an interesting announcement, kind of to me it was a surprise, that Senator Richard Burr, the Republican who is running for re-election against Deborah Ross, has said that he will not run again after this election cycle. Why make that announcement before the election cycle is over?
It's exactly the right question, especially when you're considered one of, if not the most vulnerable Republican in the Senate up for re-election against a surprisingly tough challenger in Democrat Deborah Ross, and also facing Sean Ha, Libertarian. He says it was for his wife. He actually spoke to the News and Observer. This announcement was made in Cleveland when he was speaking to the North – or sorry, outside of Cleveland in Ohio.
He actually told it to Time Warner Cable News in March. So
really?
It actually wasn't – look, it caught me by surprise too, but he Tim Boyum at Time Warner Cable said, look, he told me the same thing in March.
Huh.
And Richard Burr, not less publicly but you know still amongst the circles, has not made it a secret that he kind of had to be talked into running for re-election.
That's absolutely
again
right.
This time. And
so will this have an impact on him this time?
He's got, what, $9 million cash on hand in the bank, $10 million?
I mean, yeah, but, elections are about aggregate, right? It's all these different kinds of things. He's already in a tough race. If it seems like it matters on how hard he really does push.
Right. If this kind of
does he really want it?
Yeah, that's really the question. It is an odd thing, March and now. It's just an odd thing to say when you're in a campaign.
So the governor spent 40 minutes with us a few minutes ago, and we have reached out to and hope to hear back soon from Attorney General Roy Cooper, who is running against the governor in the gubernatorial race, and we'll have him on for a similar amount of time in the future. We also spent a considerable amount of time this morning talking about HB2, and there will be a public conversation on this next Tuesday evening here at McGlohan Theater at Spirit Square at 7 o'clock. We invite you to join us for this. It will be a live broadcast on this program at 7 p.m. that night, to be repeated the next day. But if you'd like to participate in that conversation, be in the theater, and to do that, you have to make your reservations and get details at WFAE.org. Thanks to our News Roundup folks, Tom Bullock, Nick Oxner, Eric Frazier, and Eric Spanberg.